The third and final case on today's oral argument calendar is case number A23-1548, Jolene Luzak versus St. Mary's Medical Center. As counsel likely know, each of you will have 15 minutes for your principal arguments, and appellant's counsel will have an opportunity for 5 minutes of rebuttal argument. When each of you begins, please introduce both yourself and your client. Counsel for appellant, you may approach and begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Eric Beyer. I represent the plaintiff and appellant, Jolene Luzak. May it please the court, counsel, when Ms. Luzak called us for help, the concern, the subject at hand, was why did she nearly bleed to death and nearly die about a couple weeks after an angiographic procedure performed in February of 2020? That was the subject at hand that we began the inquiry of this case on. The question was there an indication, something that the doctor may have missed after that angiogram that should have alerted the doctor to tell her she was not safe to travel? So in order to do that, we ended up finding Dr. Scott Resnick. Dr. Resnick is board certified in both diagnostic and interventional radiology, where he has a clinical practice in both fields. And he's a full professor of vascular surgery at Northwestern Memorial Hospital, which is a primary academic and teaching hospital of Northwestern University. And he's a professor. He has two professorships. The other one is in vascular and interventional radiology. He reviewed the records. He said, he reviewed that ultrasound after the angiogram in February, and he said, there's a swing and a miss. Literally, the doctor misread that. She had a pseudoaneurysm after the procedure Dr. DeMaribus performed, and it was an urgent issue. He read the ultrasound that he ordered and that his office ordered and said it was negative, and he sent her on her way, and then, of course, nearly all damages that we have in this case stem from that part of it.
Okay, so basically that's your strongest argument, in a sense.
That is our strongest argument, and that is the majority. That's the reason we took the case on.
Okay. But isn't the problem there, though, that the people that were looking at that certainly didn't have the expertise of Dr. Resnick when it comes to viewing imaging like that and drawing a conclusion? And it seems like you're wanting to hold this doctor to the standard that we might hold a Dr. Resnick, who actually is, specialized in radiology and intrusive radiology. But is that what we're supposed to do in these kind of cases?
What the court is supposed to do is the burden that we have is to prove that the degree of skill, knowledge, and care ordinarily possessed and exercised by members of the medical profession under similar circumstances of the defendant doctor. That's what standard of care is. It's about the circumstances the doctor faces, and that's from Kornfeldt, a Supreme Court case. Another way that it's put is, what is usually and customarily done by physicians under circumstances similar to those which confronted the defendant accused of malpractice. So the question is, what are the circumstances? Kornfeldt is very clear. It says that the circumstances control, and it's specifically, the Supreme Court has said specifically, you don't have to match specialties. And the reason is simple. There's a lot of procedures, especially in vascular surgery, but in many, many types of medicine, where one specialist does another type of procedure. The question is, what were the circumstances of that procedure? Now, Kornfeldt, I think, is particularly important because that talks about a case where you've got a internist who is evaluating the case in question. And the facts briefly of that case where a woman comes in with stomach pain. She goes to see Dr. Tongan. Dr. Tongan does repairs a bleeding ulcer, and he then does some, he says, you know what, there's something else I found in there, you got to come back because I think you might have some cancer we got to take care of. She goes ahead and has some tests ahead of time. Dr. Tongan does the surgery, and she dies as a result of a reaction to the anesthesia because she had hepatitis. So the expert in that case was not a surgeon. He was able to show that he was able to show that this person should have never had the surgery at all.
Because of the hepatitis.
Right, right. So he wasn't even a surgeon, but he was saying, hey, look, you shouldn't even have done it. And we've got the similar facts.
Except that, you know, that doc had the ability to know that she should check further, she should check further for hepatitis.
Sure.
And then what I'm hearing here is that the issue is whether he should have been able to see this on the imaging, and because Resnick could see it, but does that tell us that other kinds of doctors would see that? Yeah.
Resnick can speak to the standard of care for doing angiographic procedures and complications related thereto. Dr. DeMaribus was doing this exact same procedure that Dr. Resnick does. The issue is, what are the circumstances of that? If the requirement was that Dr. Resnick must be a vascular surgeon, then the rule in Kornfelt wouldn't apply, which says you don't have to match it. It's about the circumstances. It's about the procedure. If you're going to do an angiographic procedure, you need to know how to do it. And competent doctors doing an angiographic procedure need to be able to recognize these things. The defense is raised this issue, and judge, the trial court bought it. They basically frame this as a surgeon has a different standard in reviewing angiographic procedures and ultrasounds, and that's just not the case. We've got, our doctor will say he knows exactly what the standard is for anybody, any doctor doing this procedure. And the only people who do it are people that are well-versed in radiographic or angiographic procedures. Sometimes they're radiographic and interventional specialists. Sometimes they're vascular surgeons.
Weren't there several people that didn't see it? That the pseudoaneurysm?
Sure. Dr. DeMaribus's physician's assistant. That was it.
Okay. How about the expert?
The expert that the defense hired afterwards? Well, that's a battle of experts. Right. Apparently, they didn't see it either.
Okay.
But that is a classic battle of the experts.
Well, sir, certainly, but it sounds like it wasn't that obvious to somebody who wasn't as specialized in the area of radiology.
Well, that would be a classic battle of the experts, something that is a fact decision that the jury gets to decide. Was there a pseudoaneurysm present or not? That is a classic fact issue. So
why do we call that a pseudoaneurysm?
Because an aneurysm actually would bow out or cause the artery to expand on both sides. A pseudoaneurysm has a slight tear on one side to cause some of the blood to pool out and maybe be contained either by surrounding tissue or...
But pseudo says fake.
Yeah, right. It's a false aneurysm, and I guess it's
just...
It was
fake as far as an aneurysm, but it was certainly a medical condition.
Absolutely.
That was dangerous.
Absolutely. No question about that, and I don't think that there is any legitimate dispute from the defense that a pseudoaneurysm is an urgent or an emergent condition that needs to be treated, observed, because it can result in death if it's not treated properly. So there's no question about that. Hypothetically, sticking to that issue, if we had hired a vascular surgeon who did not do angiographic procedures, and the question was, what happened with this angiographic procedure, what would the defense say? Would the defense argument be stronger that we don't have the right expert because we don't have an expert who does angiographs? I think it would be. And that goes back to the fundamental standard, is that we need to have an expert who is expert in the issues at hand, the subject at hand. And the subject at hand is the angiogram.
Does your... our standard of review is deferential here. It's an abuse of discretion standard with regard to the decision to exclude the expert. Would you agree with that?
Right. I'm sorry, I've cut.
I'm sorry. So would you agree that we review the district court's decision to exclude the expert under an abuse of discretion standard of review?
Yes.
And that's a deferential standard of review.
It is.
So, and here, the district court focused on Dr. Resnick saying there's, on page 10 of the order, that there was no reference to Dr. Resnick having any education, training, or practical experience with PAES or its treatment. And then the district court went on to note that he later in his later filing by Dr. Resnick, that it shows that he has experience diagnosing PAES, but the court found that it appears that his experience relates only to diagnosis of the condition. So how was that an abuse of discretion?
Because this isn't a surgery case. There was a misdiagnosis from the beginning. We had
but,
two.
But his the opinion that he was seeking to provide touched on the surgery and post-surgery care, right?
Right.
So doesn't, how is it an abuse of discretion for the district court to focus on whether he, Dr. Resnick, has experience dealing with PAES in terms of surgery and post-surgical care?
Because the trial court found facts that do not support what our position and what the facts that we have are. He abuses discretion in making fact findings that this was a surgery case, that we were questioning the competency of the surgery performed in August.
Well, the court didn't say it was a surgery case. The court talked about surgery and post-surgical care.
Well, he did say it was.
And part of, I believe, Dr. Resnick's report included opinions related to the surgery itself.
Sure, I can break that down. There were some comments about the August 2019 surgery, okay? And that had to do with the radiographic procedure done during that. But that's only relevant for purposes of the later diagnosis. So bear with me for a moment. She has the surgery, and her post-surgery recovery is wound care for the 8-inch wound in her right calf, stitch removal. Even referral to physical therapy would be post-surgical care to cure and relieve the effect of the surgical procedure. But at that point, my client presents to Dr. Resnick's office, or excuse me, Dr. Demaribus's office again with complaints of calf pain. So the question is, what's causing your calf pain? And the defense clinic then does a diagnostic test to try to understand what was happening with her calf. And it's an ultrasound. And it's the same kind of ultrasound that was done before the surgery upon which Dr. Demaribus relied to confirm PAES. Then she has an MRI that she does on her own. It wasn't even at the direction of Dr. Demaribus. She happened to be a X-ray. She worked in the MRI department. She did a voluntary MRI. And it showed, as Dr. Resnick explained, a textbook example of PAES. And here's the kicker. With that knowledge, Dr. Resnick doesn't treat PAES at that point. He does something that cannot address PAES. And the defense expert agrees. There are only two ways to treat PAES, and they're both through an open surgical procedure to either release the muscle that's constricting on the artery or to bypass that constriction through a bypass procedure, both open. Instead, Dr. Demaribus does an angiography, of which Dr. Resnick is an expert and said that could never help. In fact, it made it worse because he put in a stent that is now crushed by the external forces of the muscle in her right calf and cannot be removed. So this is a diagnosis case.
You're saying the record reflects that Dr. Resnick is an expert in doing angioplasties?
Yes.
And where in the record?
His entire CV. He's a diagnostic and radiological interventional specialist.
Relating to PAES.
That's the confusion. You never do an angiographic procedure to treat PAES, and Dr. Demaribus did, which was an error because he misdiagnosed it. You do not treat PAES with angiography. That's just diagnostic for purposes of determining blood flow. You don't treat it that way. But Dr. Demaribus ignored the scans and my time's up, but he ignored the scans.
Feel free to fully answer Judge Cochran's question.
He ignored the evidence that was available to him to make a proper diagnosis. He thought that was an intrinsic issue, which then, of course, caused him to go down the wrong path. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Beyer. You will have an opportunity for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondents.
May it please the court and counsel, my name is Richard Thomas. I'm here on behalf of the respondent, St. Mary's Medical Center, and the Duluth Clinic. I would like to start where Judge Cochran asked the question. And the issue here to be decided by the court is whether Judge Hilden clearly abused his discretion when he concluded that Dr. Resnick did not have the practical experience to judge the surgical decisions of Dr. Demaribus when he did the surgery, when he concluded during the surgery that there was a sufficient surgical release of this artery, when he made decisions following the surgery, and there was discussion about a voluntary MRI, it was actually an MRA, but Dr. Resnick opines that in and of itself can tell one when you should do surgical intervention. He's never made that decision because he is not a surgeon. Those people who have made that decision in this case, people like that, Dr. Reed, say that no, vascular surgeons do not rely upon MRAs to make that decision because they artificially appear to decrease blood flow. What you do is an angiogram. And there's been some discussion that I want to clarify that the...
Just to be clear, the case law doesn't require that the expert be a vascular surgeon.
Let's talk about that because...
Because the case law says that... Well, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to be really clear on that. And I am not making the argument that Minnesota, other states do. Minnesota does not require that surgeons are only criticized by surgeons. What Minnesota does require is that whomever is bringing the criticism has knowledge of the standard of care applicable to the defendant. And I want to talk about the Kornfeld case because that has been a little bit misrepresented and we have to read that carefully. Dr. Belsito was allowed to talk about Dr. Tongan. He's not a surgeon. Belsito was not a surgeon. Why? Because Belsito made clear, and the Supreme Court made clear, that Dr. Belsito confers with, consults with, works with surgeons to make that decision. They work together. And so in working together, he becomes aware of the accepted standards of care for a surgeon to make that decision, and in his opinion, that standard was not met. We nowhere have similar evidence in this case. The bottom line here is, and Judge Kirk, you put your finger precisely on it. The bottom line here is no one has opined that the standard of care that is being interpreted by Dr. Resnick is anything other than the standard of care for a board-certified interventional radiologist. That is not the standard of care that applies to Dr. Demaribus. The standard of care that applies to him is the standard of skill and learning normally exercised and possessed by physicians similarly trained under similar circumstances. This would be a different case if I were standing before you and this were part of the record, which it is not. If Dr. Resnick had said, I am similarly trained, as is Dr. DeMoribus.
What case says they have to be similarly trained? I mean, Kornfeldt focuses on it's the practical knowledge of what is usually and customarily done by physicians
sure.
under circumstances similar to those which confronted the defendant charged with malpractice.
I'll give you two answers to that, Your Honor. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I want to get to it. The jury instruction that has been in Minnesota for maybe 100 years, has that specifically stated. And the reason it is specifically stated falls within what you did put your finger on, is they have to have knowledge of of what is practically done. The people who have that knowledge, who are in the trenches who do that, are, and you have to be able to identify what is it that physicians in those circumstances do, and that's why you have to have knowledge of that training. There isn't a case in Minnesota that where one doctor with one specialty is critical of a doctor with another specialty, where there isn't identified, and Kornfeldt specifically does, where it isn't identified that the non-specialist or the different specialist isn't aware of the standard of care for the doctor he's criticizing. I don't want to make a silly statement here, but I'm tempted to. It may be that Mario Andretti could make a corner at 80 miles an hour, but Rich Thomas cannot. It may be that Dr. Resnick will argue that radiologists see this differently. But as Judge Kirk has put his finger on, we have three vascular surgeons who haven't seen it. And they still don't believe that he's correct about that. We need, and nowhere is there any indication that Dr. Resnick is aware of, he certainly doesn't identify, that he is aware of the standard of care for a vascular surgeon. Instead, he applies the standard of care for an interventional radiologist, which is literally irrelevant to our case. The jury will not be asked to determine what is the accepted standard of care for an interventional radiologist. And clearly, he cannot testify about the surgical procedure that was ongoing and the decisions made. Clearly, he cannot testify about whether an angiogram is necessary to make the surgical decisions going forward. Clearly. The idea, by the way, and it's a misstatement of what occurred, Dr. DeMoribus did not decide, I'm going to use a stent in lieu of surgery. That isn't what happened. What he did is he did an angiogram to learn what was happening in that vessel because it wasn't clear from the MRA. And when he learned of it, and that's important if you're going to do surgery so you know what it is you're dealing with and where you're dealing with it. And while he was there, while he was in the vessel, he saw a damage to the interior wall of the vessel, and he decided that he would use a stent that would provide a temporary bridge. That's what he did. Nobody can decide whether that is a departure from accepted standards of care who is not himself a vascular surgeon. So that doesn't fly. All of the post-surgical care has to be looked at through the eyes of someone who is trained as a vascular surgeon. And we can debate these points, but what the law provides is that the Court of Appeals will affirm the decision of Judge Hilden unless it can be shown, not that you disagree, and all three of you can disagree with his decision and not reverse him. And the case law is crystal clear on that point. There has to be a showing that he clearly abused his discretion. Now, how is that possible under these circumstances? He applied Minnesota law as it exists from the beginning. Every case has required the criticizing expert to have the foundation, either pursuant to having the same background and training or knowledge of the person whose background and training is being criticized. Every single case. We don't have a single case, and I hope we never have a single case. I hope this is not the first, where an interventional radiologist who has not identified knowledge of what accepted standards of care require of a vascular surgeon can come in and impose that standard of care on a physician who is not similarly trained, as is the interventional radiologist. Does he see things that Dr. DeMoralis doesn't see? Possibly. But this gets to that, and this is a Connecticut case, I acknowledge, but this gets to the Sharkey case that we've cited. In there, they were trying to use a radiologist to criticize the reading of an X-ray of an emergency room physician. And the court correctly said, no. The emergency room physician is held to the accepted standards of care for an emergency room physician. How can it be otherwise? How can it be otherwise when one specialty with a given set of facts meets accepted standards of care based upon the training that that specialty provides, and a different specialty with more familiarity potentially with reading a given scan can criticize this group without even knowing, without even identifying what the actual standard of care is for a vascular surgeon under those circumstances? It would be entirely different if Dr. Resnick had said, our training and a vascular surgeon's training under these circumstances is the same. I consult with them, I train with them, I know what they do, and they know what I do. We don't have that anywhere. We can speculate. We can all think, well, maybe they're doing the same kind of thing and they're looking at the same kind of scan, so they ought to be doing the same thing. We can speculate, but the case should be determined not based upon any degree of speculation, but based upon the actual record that's been presented. That evidence is simply missing. And when we look at all of the cases that come along, and the Tetfeller case is another good example, where the court says, you expert witness, may know a whole lot about how toxic a given medication may be. But unless you have been treating people who have had a transplant in light of a bone cancer, and you're in that spot where you have to decide whether or not you're going to reverse a narcotic or not, a place you have never been, we are not going to let you criticize someone who has been in that place. We don't have a circumstance in this case where Dr. Resnick has ever followed somebody post-surgically. When they say, well, you don't use a stent, that depends upon where you are in the procedure. He doesn't use it because he's never in that spot. He's never been in a post-surgical circumstance where he is looking at what happened and evaluating what happened. And absent that, he simply doesn't have the foundation to testify. And I think there's very, very good reason why there is this deferential standard that the Court of Appeals is given by the Supreme Court. If we do not defer to the trial court, if every one of these decisions is going to be looked at newly by the Court of Appeals, then every one of these decisions is going to be appealed. And it would be untoward, and the trial court will have an even more difficult time. Here, I think it is crystal clear that Judge Hilden did a very, and he, by the way, has a background in medical malpractice, so he knows what is going on in these cases. He did a very thorough analysis. He appropriately recognized that there's no evidence in the case of a practical familiarity with both the manner in which surgery was done, not in which the PEAS was diagnosed. That wasn't an issue in the case, and he recognized that. And he recognized that the post-surgical follow-up was something that Dr. Resnick had no experience with. And I think when you look at the various expert testimony and the differences in the opinions that they provided, it becomes very clear where Dr. Resnick's train comes off the track. He makes assumptions about the MRA that are not valid. He makes assumptions about the need for an angiogram that are not valid. And he draws conclusions that are not valid. When we finally get down to where he might have something to say, and Judge Gill, you put your finger, or Judge Kirk, excuse me, you put your finger on this too, he probably has diagnosed pseudoaneurysms in his practice, but what he doesn't know and what he hasn't established is whether vascular surgeons have the same training to make the same evaluation that he can. And it is not fair. It is not fair to impose that standard on a physician who doesn't have that training.
Mr. Thomas, is it possible to separate or make a distinction between two different tasks or steps that I'm imagining are part of the doctor's process? I mean, I think appellants' arguments are focusing on, I'm looking at the last part of the brief, page 29 of appellant's brief, where it talks about misinterpreting the MRA and missing the pseudoaneurysm on February 12. Also talks about interpreting the radiological evidence. Is it possible to make a distinction between, on the one hand, reading, interpreting, looking at the radiological, the results of radiological images or whatever, and, you know, taking away some information from them, and then separately making a decision about how to go forward, what's the best course of action? Because I think appellants are focusing on this first step about what he knew or what he read, what he saw, what he took away from it, not so much about how he acted later on.
It's a complex question, and I've got to untie it. Even I see my light's blinking, but let me try to answer it as best I can.
Yeah, please answer it fully without regard for the blinking red light.
All right, thank you. The MRA, he concluded, showed that there wasn't a complete release of the pressure on the artery. No, he cannot testify to that because my clients looked at it directly, and you don't determine it with an intraoperative MRA. So no, that doesn't work.
Looked at it directly, you mean in real life? In real life.
In real life. Okay. I mean, radiologists, they manipulate things in a non-surgical setting to get different views. That's fine. But that isn't what happened here. He's imposing one type of practice on the wrong type of situation, so that doesn't work. But as to the question, all right, what if we get down to where the practices overlap? And that's dealing with the, was there or wasn't there a pseudoaneurysm? That's the only area of criticism where you can argue the practices overlap. Before that, he has nothing to say about it because it's involving medical care he doesn't do. But on that, there is a potential overlap. And on that issue, we come back to the Judge Kirk's question. How can you impose the standard of an interventional radiologist, the only one he employed, on a vascular surgeon who doesn't have that training? And the answer is you can't. You need to have someone who can establish they're aware of the standard of care for a vascular surgeon. And that has not happened in this case. Thank you. We would ask that Judge Hilden's decision be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas. Mr. Beyer, if I can interrupt before you begin, can you, so that all the materials have cited the sort of the seven concise paragraphs with his seven opinions broken out into seven parts. Are you still pursuing all of those, or have you modified your request for the expert, what expert evidence you want to put in?
Sure. Those are indicia of what should have influenced Dr. D's decision to do the wrong procedure in February. So when we talk about the August 2019 issue, we can live without them. We can live without any comment about that. We think they're distinct because he's talking about angiographic issues during that procedure, which, you know, he's doing exactly what Dr. Resnick does, looking at the CT angiogram. well, we can live without him. We have enough evidence to show that she's had ongoing PAES that can only be addressed surgically without any comment about the 2019 procedure.
And maybe my question should be, you know, in the district court, when the motion was put to the district judge, was the question these seven opinions all or none, or were there arguments and positions taken about some of them might go one way, the others might go the other way?
Our argument was that it's not all or nothing. These are just all individual pieces. If the judge were to rule that Dr. Resnick could not talk about what was done in August of 2019, it wouldn't be an appeal right now, because our case should still be able to go forward based upon evidence afterwards. And we made that clear to the judge. In fact, when I asked for a motion for reconsideration, because he didn't differentiate any of that stuff, he said, no, it was narrowly tailored. I did. It's all gone. So we definitely made that clear. And, you know, we're talking about what Dr. Resnick testified about. Remember, Dr. Resnick has never been asked a single question. We've just basically been, he gave his reports and said, yeah, the standard of care is violated, and I know what the standard of care is. And of course, his CV, he's a professor of vascular surgery in addition to his clinical practice. He works and teaches with vascular surgeons all the time, and it's right there in his CV. Again, did we emphasize that point? Well, we were addressing every point that was being thrown at us, but Dr. Resnick has never been asked a question. Dr. Resnick testifies in these kind of cases all the time. He's testified against vascular surgeons without any question. Of course, we don't have that in the record because there's never been a question asked. They don't want to ask him a question because he knows that. They know that Dr. Resnick knows what vascular surgeons do, since he's a professor and he has been for 20 years in the vascular surgery department. And he has another professorship as a diagnostic and interventional radiologist. He has two professorships dealing with issues involving the vascular system.
Beyond that, then, what's his practical knowledge as it relates to this kind of surgery?
He does angiographies. He does interventional radiology procedures throughout the entire body. He addresses and fixes pseudoaneurysms or other defects within the venous system, the vascular system. He does exactly what Dr. DeMaribus was doing in the February 2019 or 2020 procedure that's at issue here. He does that routinely and has been for years.
I thought this was a real uncommon kind of condition, so I can't see that anybody would do it with any regularity.
PAES is not that uncommon. He's diagnosed it dozens of times, but you never do an angiographic procedure and stent placement to try to cure and relieve it. It's contraindicated. It's the wrong procedure, and it causes further harm. And it makes the real solution to curing this condition harder, because now the bypass has to be longer because you put a piece of wire in the vein in question, in the artery in question. So, to clarify, nobody should do this procedure what Dr. DeMaribus did for PAES. And that's what's so confusing about it, because the court says, oh, the question is a surgery for PAES. No, it wasn't. Dr. DeMaribus didn't diagnose PAES as ongoing. He thought he cured it back in August, but he didn't. That's the issue.
I earlier made reference to your arguments in your brief about interpreting your alleged negligence in the doctors interpreting radiological evidence and so on. Mr. Thomas mentioned that the doctor's treatment was influenced by his, you know, seeing it directly in real life. It was, so, you know, the doctor was informed in part by the radiological results, but also by other information that was available to him because of direct patient care.
Sure.
Can you respond to that, please?
Yeah. Dr. Resnick has talked about exactly what Dr. Demaryius did in the February 2020 procedure. He did an angiography. Dr. Demaryius concluded that there was a internal stenotic part based upon what he did, based upon what he was visualizing during that procedure. Dr. Resnick said the only way you can determine that, doing that exact procedure, is if you do provocative measures with the foot, which Dr. Demaryius did not note at all. So Dr. Resnick saw what Dr. Demaryius wrote and said you can't make that conclusion because you didn't do all the right things. And they're both doing, and this is a procedure that he's an expert in. So so if that answers the question, the point is Dr. Resnick saw what Dr. Demaryius saw and said, well, you missed something. You didn't do what you're supposed to do, so you didn't see it correctly. And then you put in a piece of wire that right after this, crushed by the muscle.
Maybe my question is or should be, has Dr. Resnick been in the position that Dr. Demaryius was in, where was acting on both radiological reports and on, you know, visual observations of a patient and then making judgments about what the treatment should be?
Absolutely, does it routinely. Absolutely does it routinely. And more importantly, PAES is a clinical diagnosis based upon radiographic imaging and patient presentation. You don't do an invasive procedure to find out something that can be seen clearly with an MRA.
So did the district court consider that aspect? Consider Dr. Resnick's practical experience in performing the angio procedures and so on?
Apparently not. There's no notation of it whatsoever. He doesn't talk about that. He just says he's an expert in diagnosing PAES, but he doesn't talk about his experience in doing the angiography at all. I mean, there were no findings about that whatsoever. And again, we never had an opportunity. There were no questions posed to Dr. Resnick. In all the other cases, we've got a situation where after hearing the evidence, you know what, you just don't know enough. There's been no opportunity for that at all. It was a blunt instrument here.
Is the experience of Dr. Resnick in doing the things we just talked about, is that stated in his report?
Yes. Yeah, he does radiographic procedures routinely. I don't think anybody questions he has the competence to understand angiographic procedures. I don't think even the defense talks about that, about the angiogram itself. Thank you. My time is up. So.
Thank you, Mr. Beyer. Thank you to both attorneys for your arguments. The case is submitted, and the court will issue its opinion within 90 days. That is our final oral argument for this panel today, and so the court is now adjourned.